Leonard Marcus's new book, Golden Legacy, The Story of Golden Books, chronicles the story of the creation, marketing, and worldwide impact of Little Golden Books, the most popular children's books of all time. Launched during the dark days of World War II, Golden Books, such as The Pokey Little Puppy, were an instant sensation, hallmarked by their quality yet affordable to nearly all. They changed the cultural landscape and mirrored our quickly changing post-war culture. Marcus's book is a tale of mavericks, innovators, and renowned authors and illustrators, and a celebration of the humble books with the cardboard covers and the shiny gold foil spines. Leonard Marcus is one of the world's most respected historians of children's books and the people who create them. He is a founding member of the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art in our region in Amherst, and is the curator of landmark exhibitions at the New York Public Library and elsewhere. He teaches at New York University in the School of Visual Arts and lectures about his work throughout the world, and it's a great pleasure to have him join us on the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, hi there. It's nice to be with you.
Very nice to have you on the program. What led you to Golden Books and to look at really the full story?
Well, I've been writing about the history of children's books since I was in college, but Golden Books are the ones that I grew up with myself. So I guess I felt it was time to look at them, give them a good look.
Give us a sense of the history and how Golden Books came about. Who is the brainchild behind the Golden Book?
In the middle of the last century, 1930s and 40s, most people who had children at home had to go to the library if they wanted to read to their kids at night, because there were very few bookstores in America except for in major cities. And if you did have the opportunity to shop for children's books, you probably would have paid about $2 for a picture book, which is over $20 in our money. So children's books weren't really that available. There were a small number of people who got together to change that. One group were printers who were based in Racine, Wisconsin. They had giant color printing presses, which were ideal for printing illustrated children's books on. The other group was two men in New York, Simon and Schuster. They were then renegade young publishers who were out to do new things for people and wanting to democratize book accessibility for Americans. So the printers got together with these brilliant marketing people who were publishing books at affordable prices for adults already. Pocketbooks was one of their early successes. And they decided to bring the price down from $2 to 25 cents, which is an amazing leap in favor of everyone's pocketbook. And it was a risky business because the only way they could do it would be if they could sell enormous quantities of these books. So they decided to sell them in places where books were not usually sold. And that included five and dime stores like Woolworth's and drugstores and train stations and supermarkets. So they, in a sense, reinvented publishing for children. And all this was happening just as America was entering the Second World War, which might seem like the worst imaginable time to start a new publishing venture. But the reason that it was actually a good time for them was, first of all, that there were lots of little kids and their mothers left on the home front, and the children needed to be comforted at night. And the First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt, in her column, which was read by people everywhere around the United States, urged mothers to read to their children at night. So Golden Books came along as the books that all those mothers could find and afford just at the right moment. And the other side of it was that the printing company in Racine were also printing all the maps for the U.S. military during the war. So they had an enormous allotment of paper, and they were able to use some of those for Golden Books, too.
You point out in the early section of the book, actually Walt Disney has a part in the story.
That's right. The printers I've mentioned, the Western Printing Company in Racine, had been doing a few books on and off even before they formed the partnership with Simon & Schuster. And they invented a new format for sort of recycling newspaper comic strips that were always so popular with children. And Mickey Mouse appeared in the comic strip as early as the early 1930s. So being very enterprising people, the Western printers wrote a letter to Walt Disney around 1932 and said, how would you like it if we published all the books for children based on your animation characters? And because Disney was a perfectionist and was always sinking his money into making his animated films better, he was always short of cash. And so he welcomed this offer. And from then on into the 80s, the various iterations of the company that started as the Western Printing Company were doing all the Disney books that were found in stores. And when Walt Disney wanted to create a theme park in Southern California in the 50s, he was once again short of cash, and he went to Western for a loan.
So you look at September 1942 as when Simon & Schuster publishes the very first Little Golden Books, and there are actually 12 titles included, including the Pokey Little Puppy, which is arguably the most famous, correct?
Yeah, yep. And it's known pretty much throughout the world. The only place it hasn't been published is the former Soviet Union, and that was because during Stalin, the Stalinist era, they thought that a story about a little character, in this case a puppy, who lags behind and doesn't do his share of the work was kind of an anti-revolutionary message.
The artist and the author are not mentioned on the are not listed on the front of the book.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say about what they were doing, and ultimately how they found these artists in the first place?
Well, one thing it says is that they were brilliant at branding, and they wanted the public to focus on one thing: this kind of fantasy world that existed within the umbrella term of golden books. So the books, every book had the same trim size, it had the same golden spine, and even though they used a lot of different artists, there was a kind of recognizable look to a golden book. And also, you would always find them in certain places. They created special wire racks to put them in the stores. No other publisher's book fit in those racks. So they were just building up an awareness of golden books, and they would list all the titles on the inside cover, and they would have characters from other books used as a decorative element on the inside of the cover too. So so that's why they did it that way. In terms of where the artists came from, many were fleeing repression during World War II, leaving Europe and coming to New York. And then there was a second group that was fleeing Walt Disney, and people who had been animators for him in the 30s but wanted to have more freedom to express themselves rather than work in a studio situation, and wanted to have the chance to create a work of art from start to finish. So these were two groups of really, really talented people who converged in the offices of Golden Books. And I think it's because there was so much raw talent there and so much experience that they, in many cases, did books that have lasted, 50 and 75 years.
And you have some major, who went on to be major artists and illustrators and writers who got their start at Golden Books.
That's right. One of the best known would be Richard Scarry.
Right.
And he was American born. His father owned a department store in Boston. Like many parents, the father was hoping his son would go into the family business. But Scarry was always, doodling. And when he was a soldier during World War II, he was illustrating for the Army newspaper. And he just, rebelled. And his father warned him that if he followed his dream, he would end up living in a garret somewhere and eating spaghetti for the rest of his life. Well, nothing could have been farther from what actually happened. Scarry was a very hard worker, and he sometimes illustrated 7 or 8 books a year, which is a staggering amount of work. But pretty quickly, people just took to his books. The large format book that he published in 1963 called Richard Scarry's Best Word Book Ever was one of the most popular illustrated children's books in history.
What is the state of the Golden Book today?
For about 35 or 40 years, the company could do no wrong. They just kept expanding, doing books in new formats, doing books on science and history and all sorts of subjects which were very far from things like The Pokey Little Puppy. But by the late 1970s, the company was losing its original creative core staff and becoming kind of too bureaucratic, so on. By the 90s, they went bankrupt, and then they were bought by Random House. And Random House, a company now called Penguin Random House, is the parent company. And they've been really devoted to reviving the books, both by reissuing some of the old ones that had disappeared, and also creating new ones by artists of this generation, like Dan Yaccarino and Bob Stack, who grew up on the books. So for them, there's something very satisfying, particularly satisfying, about adding to a list that was so formative for them as children.
Is there something about, I mean, obviously that original mission was to put books in the hands of kids who may not have books otherwise and keep the price down. That's still the mission?
Yeah, I mean, in a general way. But what happened, again, starting in the 70s, was that's when publishers of children's books started doing paperback editions for the first time.
Right.
And prior to that, they thought paperbacks were too down market, and the libraries wouldn't buy them. But that was a time of great inflation, so publishers rethought that. But what that meant was Golden Books were no longer the only bargain out there for kids' books. And they also, there were a lot of imitators, publishers who did series that looked like Golden Books. I can think of at least three. So it sort of it diluted the original uniqueness of Golden Books. But you know, it continues to the books continue to be a bargain relative to what everything else that is on the market. And I think they've sort of acquired an aura so that some of the best illustrators of today want to, you know, associate themselves with it. So I think it has a promising future.
And also, we are, and no small part, thanks to your book, really coming to celebrate these books of our youth that no matter whether we were a kid growing up in the 40s, 50s, 70s, or 90s, we still relate to The Pokey Little Puppy and many of the original books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I grew up with Golden Books. I was living in a small city, Mount Vernon, New York, just north of New York City. And we did not have a bookstore, but we did have a Woolworths. And it must be that that's where my mother would go and bring these things home. And, I mean, I can remember lying on the rug when I was 3 or 4 years old and just sort of poring over the pictures in the books. So they were very, you know, young child friendly. Even if you couldn't read yet, there was a lot to be gotten from them because the pictures were so vivid. And, for example, my older relatives, of which I had quite a few, would always, not knowing what else to say to a four-year-old, they would say, "And what do you want to be when you grow up, little boy?" And that was a, sort of a vexing question. I never knew what to say to them. But there was a Golden Book called When I Grow Up, and it was all about answering that question. So I would study the pictures for hours thinking about it. And for a while, I was sort of torn between becoming a gas station attendant and a cowboy. And it was, that's the kind of the way little kids think, you know?
Sure.
And
you could do both, I guess.
It was useful for me.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think of it, I remember, I had Pokey Little Puppy. I remember there was one, and I was pleased to see it's in the book. It's Winky Dink.
Mm-hmm.
Which was also a TV show, Jack mm-hmm. Barry. But it is interesting because there are the books that were specifically for Golden Books, but then they did do a lot of licensing as well.
Yeah, well, that really gathered momentum in the 50s and afterward. And part of that, of course, was just I think it became a bigger thing in the later years when, as I said before, the really brilliant innovators were gone. But when it started, apart from, you know, the need to make a profit, it was also a way of bridging the worlds of books and television. And in the early 50s, when TVs were just starting to come into a lot of American homes, There was a lot of anxiety in the book publishing world and in the library world and in the school, you know, the world of teachers and parents about what impact that was going to have on children's future as readers. And there were a couple of TV shows like Our Miss Frances and Captain Kangaroo where the hosts would read picture books to children on every show. Some publishers were reluctant to let them do that because they thought, well, if they read the book on a national TV show, nobody's going to want to go out and buy the book. They'll feel like they've already had that experience. But the opposite turned out to be the truth. I think Golden Books were among the books that were often seen on TV, and it became a way of sort of reconciling the two media and showing that they could complement each other.
And why there is a Captain Kangaroo Golden Book.
Right. Yeah, it tended to kind of loop on itself. And, of course, there were, you know, lots of Mickey Mouse Golden Books after a while.
We should also note there is a Donnie and Marie Golden Book. Let us not forget that.
No, that's very important.
Golden Legacy is the name of the book. The story of Golden Books and is published, not surprisingly, by Golden Books. Leonard Marcus, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Golden Legacy, the story of Golden Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.